Kamal, you're not a good friend, and I just don't like the way you treat me. I think that if I could do it all over again, with the knowledge I have now, I would never leave home. Even though this experience was a loss of innocence moment for me, and it caused me true hell, mentally and physically. I've always seen youth, adolescence, youth, your 20s, as almost like a poison.
Well,
you know, I grew up feeling like my duty in this life is to be useful, to be helpful. But that's a toxic way of being.
So when I meet somebody,
I don't feel this need to put on a smile so that if I'm not enjoying the conversation, I can't hide it. You know, I'm only, having been in Poland, I think that I carried this guilt that I was away from my mom. I'm losing my shyness. I'm no longer timid to tell people, nope, sorry, you're crossing my line.
Munir, hello and welcome to the show, Storytelling with Kamal Zahid. I am so excited to have you on today, and I look forward to our conversation.
Likewise, man, always a pleasure to speak with you, and love what you've done with the place.
Thank you. So you and I share a lot of aspects, I would say, of our life here in Poland. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about how did you end up here? I know you answered this question a million times.
I graduated, 12 years ago, and I applied for this fellowship, knowing that Europe was the place for me. I got the scholarship, and I came, I took it seriously, I wanted to. They put me as a teaching assistant, but in fact, I was made a full professor at the University of Gdańsk.
You're from the U.S., so what's the parallel, what's the differences, what's the challenges you were facing there as a foreigner?
Here, you mean?
You mean in Gdańsk, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I think I never felt, I've always been othered. I don't like this term, but the truth is, having been born Munir Harp in the United States of America, right?
Yeah.
My family were immigrants. So I, from day one, it's not like we were in a town with a lot of immigrants, right? I think I was top three darkest guys in the whole place, you know? I grew up at the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
And you've probably all seen the TV show, but that,
we did.
That caricature is very true. It's very much like an Italian, Polish, Irish, Catholic town, 100,000 people. And I was never, I look back on this, you know, happily, but I was never really allowed to integrate into that culture. One, because I'm the only kid eating hummus at home and, you know, with a mom speaking Arabic, if she drove me to school, it'd be like, la, 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 crazy music coming out of the car, you know? It's like, it's not that I had trouble making friends, but... Yeah. I never felt American, so to speak. I think a lot of people, especially post 9/11, maybe didn't allow me to feel that way. At the same time, I never felt Lebanese because I didn't really speak good Arabic growing up. I was only in Lebanon until we were four. And so it was very easy for me to come to a new place and feel like an outsider, a foreigner. That's always been my identity, I think, being a chameleon, or just like adaptable in that sense, is built into me. It doesn't bother me, for example, even after these years, if I don't understand what's happening in the room with the Polish, et cetera, I'm okay with that. You know, I like to just be in my head, myself. I don't have this like sense of I don't belong. So it was an easy transition. Travel's always been easy for me. I think I was just born or built to adapt to places. Yeah, but coming here, to Europe, I didn't have a party lifestyle in the U.S. That wasn't really my way. My friends who are, they remain, I mean, the greatest blessing in my life are an intellectual bunch, a silly bunch, you know, like the perfect combination of nerdy and smart people that are also incredible fun. But we were never into like self-destructive behaviors, you know, not a drinking kind of group, not a whatever, smokers, just messing around with each other. And so coming to Europe, that kind of changed. Europe is the place where I did indulge in partying to an unbelievable extent. I mean, when you consider how little I did it in the U.S., because here, okay, alcohol is just part of the culture, part of the lifestyle. U.S. is like prohibition culture. Alcohol is highly stigmatized, or was for a long time. highly taxed, you know. People aren't drinking a beer with their afternoon lunch. You look like a psycho, but in Spain, that's totally fine, right? So I would say the transition was that I became a lot more extroverted in the partying sense, but nothing changed internally. There wasn't like a loneliness or this sense of othering, because I think I just always existed in this space, you know, in myself.
Did you notice like something different? How to connect? Let's put it this way. How to connect with a Polish person in terms of friendship?
I think it's a universal approach to connecting with people is to just be as vulnerable as possible. I think authenticity is always attractive. Even if you don't have the most positive personality in the world, even if you don't have a lot to say, I think people like to be around expressions of authenticity because it feels, I want to say safe. It's a truth, right? Authenticity is truth, and truth makes people feel safe. I've never felt I had something to hide. I think it's always been my MO with connecting with people to just like full disclosure outright. And that definitely benefited me exceptionally in Sopot, because that was not the case in the culture, right? So when I would meet people, immediately I would be told, and I'm sure you had this as well, oh my God, you're so positive. You're just like so smiley. you're just so happy. And I'm like, of course I'm happy. I'm living in an incredible place. Like I'm blessed to be able to travel, you know? And you know, there was an incredible amount of feedback just for being positive and being yourself. It really cultivated in me this realization that you can be yourself, you can be kind, and you can be, you know, open and honest and gentle, and you can get positive feedback from people. Whereas I found in the US, at least at that time, at least as a dumb 20-something-year-old, you have this impression that you're supposed to be kind of a dick, you know, kind of like put on a dominant attitude. There's a lot more of this like competitive nature. I think the US is a lot more cutthroat in that way. Post, you know, European Union entry for Poland around 2012, there was like a celebratory atmosphere in the air here, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, man. I miss this. Good days.
it felt like people were just so happy to be free and in Europe that there was this inclusiveness that was incredible. I mean, pre-2015, when migrant crisis and new government, et cetera, there was this sense of Poland being like US, and I don't know, in the 50s or 60s or something, right? Not that I was born there, but what you hear about, the summer of love, this like feeling of just love and connection, could have been totally a delusion from having been freshly here, right?
I had the same experience. I cannot help but notice that friendships are getting shallow or weak, I would say. So why is that? Why friendship seems so hard these days, like to be with someone, a friend, do things with, and, you know, build things with. But the betrayals and all this thing, is it me or?
It's you, bro. I'm sorry.
I see you. Thank you. Cut.
I didn't want to say anything. No, look, as a meta idea as to why, in general, people are more lonely, we've lost the basic structure of human community. Every single species out there has like a word for them in a group, right? Like a pack of wolves, right? What a human community, what is our word, right? I guess it's a community of humans. There might be one, excuse my ignorance, but I would say that it's a community or a tribe.
Yeah, definitely a tribe.
Yeah, but to call people a tribe these days would seem rather primitive,
doesn't,
right?
Doesn't fit.
So I think that in our case, and I feel this more and more every day, and I'm sure you do, that being in Poland, I will only ever be able to like create a sense of home and community and tribe to a limited extent, because in America I have the people I grew up with for the first 22 years of my life. I have my family, you know, I have the people who speak my native language, and I have people who share my customs, and for the most part. So number one, I think the reason is that we've lost sight of the prioritization of community, because we're trying to go at it alone. And alone is a lonely-ass place. It is. When you're abroad here in Poland for the first time, you know, the first 5 years, what was it? It was this incredible liberation.
Yeah.
It is that classic you know,
cycle,
the hero's journey or what have you. You go out there, you leave home, you go find yourself, you slay the dragons you have to, but you end up back home. You're supposed to end up back home. Why? Because everything you discovered abroad, the treasures, so to speak, that you found in your exploration, you're going to value them in your home currency, right? You need, they're only as valuable to you as how they're valued in your home currency, as a metaphor. Basically, you're only going to see how much they've affected you and changed you when you bring them home. Otherwise, your
environment.
You got to crash the contexts together to really see the change that's been made, the growth. You got to bring it all back home. That's the key for me. So I think you and I were kind of stuck in the treasure-seeking phase. We don't bring it back home enough, and we haven't really made our home here. I mean, our community here.
So that's an interesting point you bring, because whenever I now go back to Morocco, I just feel different. It just hits different. When I go back to Morocco now, and I'm like walking in the beach, and the sun is shining in my face, and I hear the birds, and I hear Arabic language, or rather Moroccan, and it just like, whoa, it just feels surreal, you know? So that's statement that I it just came like this, you know, it's like we leave our homeland to, so we can learn to love it. And
completely agree.
So you'd see yourself going back to the US, living in America, with all what's going on?
I never thought the US was going to be on the table again, but
okay,
like you, and I've been going home, you know.
You see it.
When I go back to the US, I feel this sense of community that's irreplaceable. It is the thing. I've always seen youth, adolescence, youth, your 20s, as almost like a poison. You know, it's something you need to get out of your system. I don't believe there's a better state to live in than a state of perfect contentedness in the present moment, right? You can't be happier than yourself fully embracing where you are right now. If your mind is somewhere else, you're always going to have a desire. You're always going to have an expectation that you're not meeting at the moment, and you're not going to be happy, right? So for me, all the details of life, right? The 20s, the seeking, the treasures, the experiences, that is not an aggregating period. That's an expelling period. That's trying to get those urges out of you so that you can be content in the moment, not yearning to be somewhere else or yearning to be doing something else or being with other people. In my 20s, I don't know if like you, if I would be with my friends and they would be like playing video games, I'm like, man, why aren't we out talking to girls? Why aren't we doing this? What are we doing? Now it's like, I can't imagine a more heartwarming or a place I'd rather be than in a pile of my friends playing video games on the couch, right? Because I got those experiences out of my system. So if youth is an urge or a poison, it is something you need to expel. And the way you expel that is by living as adventurous as life as you possibly freaking can. And I think making it a full-time job, right, to have all these experiences while you can, it's like you need the nutrients of life. There's fruits in youth that you need to eat. You take the nutrients, you excrete the rest, right? That's how it works. And so whether I see myself going back to the US, ironically, in my dreams, I wish I could go back. I wish it was so easy for me to drop the life I'd built here. But now I live in like this dichotomy, and it's not something that I would
be easy to.
It's not something I would do again. I think we err. I think we make a mistake when we leave our community. I truly do. Our cultures, you know, Arab culture, Muslim culture, we are extremely tribal, community-based. It's like we're like Game of Thrones world, right? We have houses. It's like,
true.
When people in Lebanon ask you,
what house?
They don't ask you your last name. They say, what house are you from? Yeah. It's very Baratheon.
Very Jon Snowy.
It's super cool, but The truth is, we don't have this individualism that's really the feature of American culture, right? Every man for himself. 18, you get out there, you start adventuring in your life, and your parents say goodbye. You leave the nest.
Yeah.
We don't have that in our culture. So for me, and I guess like you, now that you've come here, we are kind of this this mixture of both, right? You have this individualism. You have to go out there. I guess there's a sense of duty. Also, you want to build and collect knowledge so that you can improve your family and your tribe, bring home money and bring home riches, whatever you want to call it, to keep on this metaphor for far too long. But
yeah,
I think that if I could do it all over again with the knowledge I have now, I would never leave home. I never would. I had to leave home to expel all those, you know, urges to be somewhere else, to explore, to see different lands. And I'm so glad I did, because it's come full circle.
Do you think that Poland has made you a better man, shaped you to become the better version of yourself?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I think that time has done that. It's not necessarily Poland, but I believe that everyone has a heart, a path of their heart that's set out for them. I don't think it's a map. Mm. I think it's a compass. And I don't think you should know what the next steps in life are that you're supposed to take. But I do believe that your heart, physically, I'm not even talking like esoterically here, physically, I think your heart points you to decisions you're supposed to make. The time horizon on that is not far. It's kind of like maybe the next month or even the next day, the decisions you're supposed to make, right? But if you trust it, I believe that you live out your heart path. And I don't think there's a better path for you in this lifetime than the one your heart is compassing you toward, right?
100%.
So, yeah, I had to come to Poland, as random as it is. Mm. On Fulbright, I can choose from 160 countries. I chose Poland. I did, for a variety of reasons. But Poland has been the most unlikely arena for awakening that I would ever imagine. You know, to this day, it's not just why Poland here, it's why Poland in the US too, right?
Right.
I'm sure it is in Morocco.
Yeah.
People are like, why don't you go to Germany, bro? It's like,
yeah, well, France.
Like, oh, they don't get it. That, to me personally, nothing's exciting about being in New York, this place where it has such a strong identity and expectation from its citizens to be New Yorkers, that you spend your life trying to be one. You're not like trying to, you don't really shape, only like the select few shape the city and the culture and even like the skyline, right?
Yeah.
But here it just felt like it's a fresh place. It's a newborn metropolis, which has incredible people and brains and great, you know, even fashion and whatever, great infrastructure. Way more advanced than New York, for example.
True.
But you know very well better than anybody that here, there's not a big separation between, it's not as stratified. So when you go to the clubs, how many clubs are there that's like billionaires only?
Yeah.
None. I mean, the clubs where with the wealthiest of society, exactly, access is the word.
When we do meet Polish people, they're like, what are you doing in Poland? Why Poland? And often the girl would anticipate, if you're talking to a girl or a woman, she's like, oh, I know why you're here. You're here because of the Polish girls, you know? And I wish to say, oh, yeah, of course. But obviously, it's part of it. So my question to you, because I know you've been my love coach for the longest time.
Hey.
And always, you know, struggling in relationships and that. It's fun I say this. I just destroyed my whole fresh business now.
I'm a coach to coaches.
A love coach is different than a dating coach. So
this is true.
You know, it's different. You know, I get you there and then I like, choose, take care.
I've seen you work. There's no doubt about it.
No, but seriously, I remember, because was it 3 or 4 years ago, I was in this kind of super serious relationship, and which unfortunately didn't work out. And I was left with asking so many questions. You basically shared the most powerful advice, like how to meet women. And that was be honest and be brave. So could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, well,
In all aspects of honesty and bravery and courage.
Sure. I would say first that that's not just advice to meet women. That's the ultimate approach to life.
And then it's like,
yeah, I think that captures most, solves most problems optimally. First, I want to give credit to my best friend and brother's mom, Nick, in the US.
Shout out to Nick.
His mom, Kim, who's been like a second mom to me, used to tell her boys, if you don't know what to do, just be honest.
Okay, that's how I remember it, right?
So, yeah, that got me thinking. And I think, let me give you a little anecdote. I went to therapy in 2017 for the first time. And like a lot of people, even though I love psychology and I love the idea of getting access to my darkness and my residue and getting it out, I'm not afraid to go into those jungles, right? I want to find it. But as I was sitting in the waiting room in therapy, going ruminating over all the things that I want to talk to the therapist about, all the hurts that I've retained and all the things that have been left that I wish I could have changed and said in those situations, I realized quite literally that everything that I was balling up and bringing into that therapist's office would have not been there if I had just been honest to the people who caused me those pains from day one. The entirety of most of our emotional constipation, all the residue that we build up, all the things we ruminate about, all those stale emotions that no longer reflect right now, but that we carry because we haven't expelled them, are because we are not expressing ourselves honestly. We're not doing our boundaries and ourselves justice. As I sat there, I realized if I had just told that person, no, fuck off, right? I wouldn't be sitting there. They would have been gone. Instead of hurting them, I hurt myself. I believed that that person couldn't continue living without me being a part of their life, for example. So I said yes where I should have said no, and I told myself, that's what Jesus would do. That's what Gandhi would do. That's what my heroes would do. That's what the Buddha would do, whomever. In those situations, we are so used to caring about the feelings of the other person that we sacrifice ourselves. We martyr ourselves in a way. But the trick is, the truth is, you're hurting both people in that situation. So taking the honesty from that, you know, formula of honest and brave, honesty is kindness and nothing else. It is pure, unadulterated kindness. When you're honest with somebody, you are giving them the greatest gift of all, which is truth and safety and honesty. They may not like the words you're saying, but it is so much better than lying to them and creating a web of what's now going to become a spiral of inauthenticity. That's how you end up in a therapist's office, because the day you tell that person yes when you mean no, you take home resentment. You say, fuck, like, why am I the one suffering when they're such an asshole to me? But, you know, I can't tell them no because then they're going to get mad at me or whatever reason. The day you plant that lie seed, and it is a lie. People have all these different words like a white lie or what have you. No, it's a lie. If you're not telling the truth, you're slapping, basically, in my opinion, you're slapping the universe in the face. Because the truth updates the moment. Think about on your internet browser. You browse for a long, long time. You build up the cache and the cookies and the browsing history, right? And eventually you're not just like browsing with in the moment. You're bringing all this shit with you everywhere, to every page you go to, every moment. You got to press F5. Yeah, clear the cache and press F5 and refresh things. That's what happens if you and I, for the last 5 years, have had a passive-aggressive argument. And it's like, if I didn't like something about you, but I can't tell you because you're my friend.
Yeah, it's going to build.
It's going to build to the point that 5 years down the line, I'm going to feel like this isn't a real friendship. We're both not ourselves. And in fact, every moment with you feels inauthentic. It becomes miserable. And a lot of people's relationships are like that with their girlfriend or boyfriend, right? The only reason to F5 that moment, refresh that moment, is for me to be like, Kamal, and this isn't true. You know, you're not a good friend, and I just don't like the way you treat me. And you got to have that moment where honesty comes out. And if you don't have the courage to be honest, that's where the brave part comes in.
I see.
Cultivating bravery to me just means getting enough experience and enough confidence to know that you're allowed to be brave in that moment and make bravery a habit, right? It should be a habit for you to speak up for yourself. But for many people, it's not. It's like we have conditional people that we can be honest with. Maybe I can be honest with, you know, one of my brothers, but I can't be honest with, you know, you can't be honest with your boss, but you can be honest with your mom, right? People have this like these like limitations about where they can apply honesty. So the bravery part comes in.
So it has to be.
You got to cultivate a universal.
Apply to all. Click.
Boundaries are simple. Yeah. Boundaries are making, making boundaries a habit.
This episode is brought to you by Mekner's, where Moroccan craftsmanship meets modern luxury. Immerse yourself in the elegance of our leather goods, from beautifully handcrafted bags to elegant belts to classic wallets, all designed with meticulous attention to detail. For Warsaw Confidential listeners, enjoy an exclusive 15% off with code WARSAW15. Thank you for supporting our brand and this podcast.
Okay, because that's what I want to talk about, because I know you are a big advocate of boundaries, which the other day we talked about, it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. So, because you were mentioning saying no, saying yes, that's boundaries. So how do you go about that?
I think there's no greater culmination of your experiences in your 20s, especially, than learning, which always happens around this age, right? Currently in my early 30s, by this time in your life, you know who you are, you know what you like, you know what you don't like. You get to a point where you don't have that openness you had in your 20s anymore. You need your limitations and your boundaries respected, right? So, number one, how do we define boundaries? Boundaries is essentially, you should be allowed to be yourself as fuck without shame. That's it. And if somebody is trying to mess with your expression of being yourself as fuck, then they are messing with your boundaries. They're trying to knock you out of the things that make you comfortable, where your mental health stays the healthiest in that box. So for me, what I've learned in my life, having grown up in a family where I've always felt I had to help and contribute with pleasure, but you know, it's something that not every kid experiences. I know you have a similar experience.
Yeah.
You feel a sense of duty to your family and to the people in your life. So when you build that as part of your personality, right, helping and making sure that you are always being useful, you tend to seek out people's problems so that you can help them with those problems. You tend to make people feel that they can rely on you. And if they don't rely on you, you think to yourself, hey, I don't think you understand. Like, I'm trying to help. So that's, the boundaries go two ways. There's bilateral boundaries, as I say. Side one is classic idea of boundaries, which is you don't let people mess with your shit. You don't let people cross your line. The other side of boundaries is you have to stop yourself from crossing other people's line. Because just because you think you're going to help them doesn't mean they want that help, right? And it doesn't mean that you can help them. Even if you think you can, even if you know you can, that's very hard for me in my life. It's been hard for me to drop the idea that I can't help this person because they don't want my help.
It's like the superhero syndrome.
Very much so.
I need to help this person.
But you have to learn to stop yourself, right? Overall, I would say that boundaries are the shortcut to mental health, to maintaining your mental health. And I think that honesty is the only way to express your boundaries, and cultivating bravery is the only way that you're going to be able to be honest across the board in your life.
Why do you think people are not honest anymore, or why does it feel like it?
Yeah, it's a classic case of taking the safest possible route. So if you grow up in a home, let's not say everything is related to your upbringing, but you know, I'm of the classic school of thought that you spend the first maybe 12, 11 years of your life getting shaped by your environmental factors. You're not really in charge of who you want to become, right? You have quite a few relatively limited amount of years in adolescence where you choose who you want to become. But I would say that the reason people learn the habit of trying to hide their true feelings is because in their upbringing, they were met with consequences for being honest, for expressing their needs. So imagine you grew up in an abusive home where if you express your needs to your mother or your father, and your mother or father meets those needs, doesn't meet those needs, one, you learn that the pain of expressing the need and not getting it is so bad that you stop expressing any need. You convince yourself that you don't need anything because it's safer that way. And two, you recognize, you learn that when you are honest to your parents, hey, mom, I don't, you know, like the way you're behaving, or hey, bro, I don't like the way you're behaving. If they hit you or they yell at you or they, you know, if in any way you're just met with anything other than an understanding halfway point of, let's say, calm discussion, you're just going to learn that being honest means getting met with really bad feelings, really bad feelings. So when you grow up in a home where you don't know how to express yourself because you don't know what which expression leads to which consequences, you take the safest possible route, which is always people-pleasing.
Mm.
That's the safest possible route. So, and this is a real pandemic, especially in Anglo cultures, right? In the U.S., in England for sure. I know that it's a common trope in the U.K. that people just generally put on a polite face and
wow.
express politeness, even if they're kind of, you know, holding something in. I will say that Poland is wonderful at being very openly expressive. So why aren't people honest? They don't feel safe expressing their true feelings and their true needs because historically they've been met with resistance or backlash for that reason.
So what led you to be a boundaries advocate?
It's my official title.
Exactly.
What led me to be an advocate for boundaries is my own personal realization that I was martyring myself far too often to please others, because that's how I was raised. That's how I grew up. I grew up feeling like my duty in this life is to be useful, to be helpful. But that's a toxic way of being. Eventually, you lose concern for yourself, right? Or at least you put it second or even third. I mean, if you're asking about my personal journey, yeah, it's a long one. I mean,
any story that you can share regarding that, the boundaries?
Sure. There were a few key moments, I would say, that were the kind of the catalysts for the catharsis that led me to go from somebody who thought life was kind of just easy so I could just breeze through it to then being somebody who has to put up boundaries and defend myself. I call these moments like the loss of innocence moments, because because when you're young, you don't realize that the world consists of individuals that share different paradigms on life. The bliss of youth is an ignorance of the differences that people have toward morality or ethics or just behavior. So when you're a young person, why do kids fall for predators, right? Strangers, they don't know. They don't know that there are people that are bad. They just assume that everybody's the same giggly, innocent individual that they are. So even as an adult, even in your early 20s, that's why your 20s feel like bliss. You have this autonomy. You are sexually mature. You're physically mature. You have some money, a little bit to do things. But you also still have that beautiful naivety.
Yeah.
Beautiful naivety of youth, where you think that the rest of the world is in on the same joke as you, right? It takes, unfortunately, for a lot of people, it takes tragedy. It takes a monster on their journey to really expose them to the darker side of life.
Yeah,
and in those moments, you lose innocence, and those are incredibly destructive to people who are typically trusting and open. I would say I was one of those people. Up until around 2014, I had maintained that sense of optimism and naivety and innocence. I got caught in this crazy scheme. It was almost like a movie where I was dating this girl who, over the course of a year, through very subtle means, through hacking my trust and my naivety, while at the same time love bombing me, as people love this word, yeah, over the course of a year, her health began deteriorating, and, you know, the cancer diagnosis sprung up. She was losing her hair. She was losing weight. A lot of tragedy was happening in her life. And again, because of my lack of boundaries at that time, the boundaries of the side where I wasn't able to stop myself from getting involved in her hardship, I got deeply involved and I took it very to heart and I began to really suffer. I think through some sense of heightened empathy, I took on a lot of her pain and a lot of her suffering, and I began to suffer myself, and I began to get sick, and my body began to fail, because this was the first kind of flash of darkness I'd had in a long streak of light.
Wow.
And in that flash of darkness, it wasn't something I could fix. I was so used to solving problems like that easily.
This one's a bigger one.
What do you do with cancer?
Cancer, man.
What do you do with cancer? I don't have a... Yeah. So that was a long time, and we, you know, grew very close over that period. A lot of things happened, but, you know, tragedy did occur, and it wasn't that she had died or something along those lines, but I found out that through an almost unbelievable scheme, she was lying.
Oh my God. About the cancer thing?
About cancer.
What about the falling hair, and she was just all faking it?
Correct.
Oh my God.
Even though this experience was a loss of innocence moment for me, and it caused me true hell, mentally and physically, it also cultivated in me an ultimate sense of forgiveness. Because, yes, there are people in this world that you have to defend yourself against, but that should always be a reluctant thing. Boundaries shouldn't be reluctant, because ideal humanity is connected. Ideal humanity is almost one heart. We should be a part of each other's lives as much as humanly possible, because we need each other. We thrive like that.
Yeah. Tribe.
So boundaries, when you do have to put them down, they shouldn't be reluctant, and you shouldn't want to, but you just have to. In the same way that if somebody breaks into your home, you don't want to kill somebody. You don't want to hurt anybody, but you have to. You have to.
So how did you take that experience about all these lies, and what was your reaction to it, and how did you grow from that?
Well,
see that story.
Yeah. It took a long time. I won't lie to you. I left Poland. I was extremely hurt to the point where I had a mental health crisis, because it was an actual... There were many layers of what had been hacked in me to allow that lie to happen. My ego, this superhero sense that I was doing something good for her, this sense of duty that I've always had toward my mother to take care of her. Since the beginning of my life, I can only remember this sense of duty that I have to take care of my mom, which we also share culturally. And having been in Poland, I think that I had carried this guilt that I was away from my mom. So this opportunity to help her filled that gap, you see? So after I had lost my confidence, lost my pride, felt like a fool, but also was physically ill.
Man, the betrayal, man. Deep I cannot betrayal. Imagine.
I left Poland, which had been my happy place, right?
So you said, like, okay, no more Poland, or?
I went back to the U.S. I spent a couple of months just being back with my tribe, right? Being in a bowl of chicken soup. That's what I had to be.
Man.
I needed mom. I needed friends.
The annoying taxi drivers.
Familiarity, right? Yeah, familiarity meant safety.
Yeah.
And after that period, I decided, I was in the U.S. for 2 months. I decided that my brother, he was in the U.S. as well, also going through a transitional period. So we decided to go to Poland and try to play music together.
Right.
And that's what we did. We formed our little band. I realized that if I had to fix... Mind you, those 2 months were not easy for me. This was nightmares, very often, a lot of darkness. I started to have what can only be described as a mental health crisis, where imagine this person you thought you were, this great man, this good man, this smart, sharp guy who can navigate the world and has been like a traveler and
yeah.
just like kicking ass throughout your 20s, and then suddenly you get humiliated and betrayed, and you realize you're not as great as you thought you were. It was a massive hit to my ego. Massive. To the point that I, you know, as we know in spiritual traditions, shedding the ego, so to speak, is the way...
Death of ego.
Is the way to enlightenment. It's the path to enlightenment. And I think in the Christian or Catholic tradition, these moments where you have such a take such a huge ego hit that it you fall apart mentally, this is known as the dark night of the soul.
Wow.
And I went through my dark night of the soul, and it was not a night. It was many months.
Nights.
Many nights. And it took a lot of recontextualizing to decide that, one, I didn't want to lose my happy place, which was Sopot. I had to take it back.
Ah, the glorious Sopot.
I had to take it back. And two, I wanted to go there with a little bit of familiarity, which was my bro. And, you know, me and Sammy have always been close, and we both played music. So we thought, let's have our little adventure. So by the end of those 9 months that we spent, we had become experienced musicians. Sammy had become a confident singer. He went off to Warsaw, went on The Voice of Poland, and became quite a popular singer here at Disney.
Semifinals,
yeah. I decided that in that year, this dark night had just kept getting darker and darker, but also I was emerging with like an identity, kind of a paradigm for the awakening I was going through. And I recognized that I'm so full of a residual sense of self that doesn't exist anymore. That was destroyed. This idea of a Munir who's, you know, strong and an ego and he's cool and he's, you know, whatever, dominant. He was dead. He was just dead, and I was still clinging to him, and looking back at him and clinging to him was just hurting me more because it wasn't me. So I decided that I had to actively start from scratch, and I tried in the most literal way possible. I stripped my entire life of almost all pleasantries, pleasant things.
Desires.
I went full monk.
You went full Ramadan.
Full-time Ramadan. I moved to Lebanon. So ancestrally, I'm from Lebanon. I had not lived there or really been there since we were kids. And I had always had an estranged relationship with my dad because my parents divorced early on. I wanted to know his story. And I wanted to understand if he went through what I'm going through now. So when I went to Lebanon, it was in a state of being totally on a vegan diet. I was exclusively taking cold showers. I was 100% celibate, completely, you know, no alcohol, no smoking, absolutely nothing. And also...
And how long did you do that?
That was a little over a year.
Whoa, you're a gladiator, man.
and it was incredible, you know?
Massive respect. So you have to tell us, like, how did you manage, man? Like,
as you were going through now, you're fasting, right?
Yeah, but this is like...
But once you...
It's like Disneyland of what you did.
Once you kick it off, though, it becomes very easy because nothing feels better than that lightness you get from a reset or just feeling what felt like purity at the time, right? Anyway, in Lebanon, I bonded with my dad to a degree that I look back on it as the greatest decision I've made in my entire life to go back and get to know him. Because not only do we have a relationship now, but we have in part of the hero's journey, this mythology arc, you're supposed to reconcile with the dad or kind of just know his place in your life and reform it. That's exactly what happened. And to this day, my dad and I are just like friends, and he takes me seriously. You know, I think he looks to me as his confidant. More importantly, he feels that I understand him, and I do. I saw his side of things. So after that monk year, you know, and mind you, that monk year was almost like I don't want to call it a disorder, but it was very self-flagellating. It was very much, I should deprive myself because I spent all these years partying and, you know, enjoying my life, and look, it led me to that disaster. That was my comeuppance. I had it coming.
I had this
Whoa. Cancer situation coming. So when I deprived myself of all those things, it was almost my way of prostrating myself to the universe saying, do what you want with me. I'm not going to hurt a single thing. I'm not going to hurt myself. I'm starting from scratch and I'm leaving it to you. And it was in that those moments of silence in our little mountain home in Lebanon, alone for weeks on end, in deep silence, that I started to hear the compass again.
Wow.
And I think that's what a lot of people, that's why a lot of people lose track of the compass that we talked about earlier, the one that sets you on your heart path, which I believe is the closest you can get to whatever idea of God you have. You know, if God has a plan for you, it is in listening to your heart, quite literally, that the urges of that compass. I got back in touch with it in such a strong way that I really stopped doubting any step of my life. I just started to have a series of events that led me to my current, you know, work, and then the amazing situation I have and the amazing business partner that I have. And I'm a lucky person, you know, and almost all of that happened in passivity, not in an active effort. I simply said, like, if the compass is pointing that way, we say yes and we let it happen. Now, that's passivity again. It leads you only so far before you realize that being passive, which by definition is letting things come to you, you also kind of compromise your boundaries, right?
Absolutely.
That was the motif of the last few years. It was reconciling all of that, consolidating all that I had learned, and trying to balance this sense of letting things happen to you with when I'm supposed to actively interfere and put up a boundary. And I think that, yeah, the series of ups and downs and the peaks and valleys and the experiences that I had have taught me now when I'm supposed to activate the boundaries. Because when you first get boundaries, it's like a kid with a new toy. It feels powerful. You're like Frodo with the ring. Yeah. You know, you're like, whoa, I'm losing my shyness. I'm no longer timid to tell people, nope, sorry, you're crossing my line. And when that happens, it's like a power trip. You also don't know. You start to doubt everything. It's like, wait a minute, am I supposed to let that person say that to me? Is it nice to let them, or is it, you know, mean to let them get away with that? It's hard, you know. Boundaries are something you need to calibrate over time. But I think I'm at a point now where I can balance connection with boundaries, because I've made my, you know, boundary setting a habit. It's almost built into my personality now. So when I meet somebody, I don't feel this need to put on a smile so that if I'm not enjoying the conversation, I can't hide it. You know, I'm almost too authentic with this. I can't just be like, my face starts to hurt. My face starts to hurt. So I don't want my face to hurt. I don't want it to hurt. That's my boundary. I'm just going to let it do what it has to do, right? And so that's the end game with boundaries. You make them a habit so that they don't take energy from you anymore. Because when something is a habit, you have energy, you optimally made that energy efficient. Habits are things that you do without expelling energy anymore, because they're just like processes. You push the button, speed dial, whatever. When you make boundaries a habit, you become a much more mentally healthy person, because now your mind is your monastery. Your mind is fortified. It's like a border for a country. There's a border patrol. You choose who comes in and out. You always act with diplomacy first. But if somebody storms the border, what do? You reluctantly have to shoot them or push them away or whatever.
I see. So would you say that boundaries is the key to happiness?
I believe it's the foundation of a journey toward happiness. Yeah. I think that until you feel that you have fortified your mind from outside influence, you are always going to be, you know, working in a system with a leak in it. So to make your mind as much of a closed system as possible, in the sense that you are the border patrol and the defense and the constitution writer and you're the founding fathers and you're the military of everything of your mind. Yeah, I would say that I had not been able to get to a point of true contentedness in the moment until I recognized that I need to respect my limits. My limits are different than other people. Some people are extremely good at just dealing with hardships and stresses and whatever. I'm relatively good at those, but for the most part, I'm incredibly sensitive. So I need to just like, I need to put these boundaries up, or I'm going to be drained to the bone and end up in a mental health crisis again, you know?
So would you say that, are you happy right now? where you're at in your life?
Sure. Absolutely.
How do you define happiness for you? What's happiness?
Well, I used to have a bunch of definitions, but my brother and dear friend and business partner, Mo Gaudat, who you may have
heard. Shout out to Mo.
Yeah, I think that Mo, in all his brilliance, did the world a big favor by making happiness into an equation. And he says that happiness is equal to reality minus expectations.
Reality minus, okay.
Yeah, so if reality is meeting your expectations, you're happy.
Yeah.
If you subtract expectations from reality and your expectations are higher than reality, then you're in a negative, right? So essentially, if life is meeting your expectations, you're happy. And I would say I'm having moments right now, because I'm going through a lot of transition, where it's not quite meeting my expectations yet. I want to get a new home. I want to, right?
I see.
I want to grow up in a lot of ways that are difficult logistically. So I have days when I lose a little hope, whatever. But on the whole, I'm one of the luckiest people on the planet. And I think that, yeah, I think I carry a fundamental happiness that is only some days tainted by a little bit of unhappiness, very acutely. Yeah. Sure.
Thank you for being here today. I'm honored. We had an incredible conversation, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to have you next week again. You will be a regular guest, that's for sure. So any parting words you want to say, or where can people find you or we work?
First of all, thank you, man. I always have a lot of respect that you do things. You do.
We keep going. What's that you call the soldier? You're a soldier for keeping.
You're a soldier.
I love that.
So you did this, and I'm honored you chose me to come on. And parting words. If you can't hear the compass, find, you need to change something. So put yourself in silence. Take some time for yourself. Get back in touch with that voice, because if you're not hearing that voice, you're hearing other people's voices. And those people don't necessarily have your best interest in mind. They have their best interest in mind. So you got to get back to a place where you're living as the guide and the driver.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Warsaw Confidential Podcast.
First of all, that.
If you've enjoyed our journey together and wish to support us further, please consider subscribing to our podcast and leaving us a review. Your feedback not only motivates us, but also helps in growing our community.
Beautiful.
Where can people find me?
As a token of our appreciation, we've partnered with Meknes, a brand where Moroccan craftsmanship meets modern luxury.
Just email me in the show notes.
Exclusively for Warsaw Confidential listeners, Meknes is offering a 15% discount on their exquisite collection of leather goods. To claim your piece of luxury, visit meknes.com and use the code WARSAW15 at checkout. Thank you once again for supporting both the Warsaw Confidential podcast and Meknes.